I'm the whip for this committee. Because of certain logistical things, I'm going to allow the secretary to the committee to proceed with a certain procedure that you have to go through.
Good morning, everybody. Chairperson Hakmeni is currently booked off on sick leave, and according to parliamentary procedure, we have to nominate a chairperson. So if members could please nominate one of the committee members, we can move forward.
Thanks. I propose the name of Honorable Mashama Ito to share the meeting today. Thanks, ma'am.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Honorable Father, but not always me, you see. You will one day be one, if you are not here. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Lord, that you could go to the committee. And good morning, everybody. Let me take this opportunity to welcome honorable members for honoring this meeting. And also welcome the department. Without much ado, I will now go straight to the agenda. And our agenda, the first item on our agenda is to give the department an opportunity to make a presentation on the budget strategy plan. But maybe before I do that, I don't know just whether it's important that we know each other.
Always.
We have to know each other so that we can speak freely. I'm Khalif Mashama Ite, representing Limpopo in the Committee of Social Services. I will allow members to introduce themselves.
Thank you. My name is Omar Boroto, the whip of the committee coming from Mpumalanga. Thank you.
Sanmanani nonke, igamala Busisiwe Mnule, ngimele iGauteng kule committee. Thank you.
Ke a leboga modulasetulo, lebiso la ka ke Lydia, ke moradi wa Moshodi, ke tswa mane profinsing ya Freistata, ke setho sa committee ena. Ke a leboga motsamaiso le
Christian.
Goedemorgen, mijn naam is Michael de Valleers. Ik vertegenwoordig die wetenschap in die committee. Goedemorgen, mijn naam is Willem Faber en ik vertegenwoordig in Noord-Kaap provincie in die committee. Okay.
Thank you, honorable members. I think now you are being known. I will give the opportunity to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wasn't certain whether you're giving us the opportunity to introduce ourselves.
Yes.
Okay. My name is Vusi Matotsela, Director General of the Department.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bogin Tuli, the Deputy Minister of Social Development.
Good morning. My name is Rogers Kichwayu, Chief Director for Strategy in the National Department of Social Development.
Good morning. Fani is President Director of Financial Planning and Monitoring.
Wiseman Mark Gasella, responsible for social policy in the department.
Token Operati, CFO.
My name is Franco, Social Assistance Appeals, PhD.
Send them back.
think, Chairperson, it should be a duty for all of us seated this side that to make sure that the documents arrive in time. Because really, I've been a member of the committee for a long time. I know how painful is it when documents arrive in the morning and you have to discuss those documents. I think we'll talk about this, DG, and make sure that we send our documents at least a week before the meeting. Let's make that undertaking.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. Okay, it is time now to allow the department to make a presentation, but I will start with the Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Without a waste of time, I'll just say a few words and say that as a department, really, we have a vision. And as a department, we want to see change in people's lives. As our vision is a caring and integrated system of social development services that facilitates human development and improves the quality of life. That is exactly what we want to do, to improve the quality of life. To me, sitting here and in committee meetings, it's not just a routine. To me, we are sitting here to put our heads together so as to say, how do we then take what is on paper to the people? To me, implementation is more important than anything else. But I just want to say to committee members, and of course ourselves as a department, that I think we've got a lot of time in offices than meeting people on the ground. We need to say what is it that we can do best to go to the people and to deliver to the people. To me, that's the most important thing. And I wish you luck in deliberating on this document. Feel free to ask whatever question you want to ask so that we get everything straight. With those short words, I think I'll give over to the DG to present, as
you
have been told, that I'll be leaving in half an hour's time.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. Today we will present to you a strategic plan for this period, including the details on our annual plan for this financial year. In the course of this presentation, it will become apparent that there has been a paradigm shift in government with regard to the approach we have taken to our work. Over the years, government departments have been concerned about outputs, effectively focusing on activities and resources that are required for. We have been challenged since this new administration came into office to do a shift in terms of how we do our work. And we will be focusing on outcomes. And as will be apparent in the course of our presentation, we will be drawing links between our strategic plan and the 12 outcomes of government. And in so doing, we will endeavor to indicate what activities will be undertaken to support what programs in order to achieve what outcomes. And that will be set out in the presentation that we are about to give. Our Chief Director of Strategy, Mr. Tlatshwayo, will take us through the presentation, after which we will be happy to take questions of clarity and discussion. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chairperson. I'll just quickly like to sort of recap on the fact that the Deputy Minister has already touched on the strategic thrust of the department. The vision itself remains intact. I need just to perhaps indicate that the realization of the vision is largely through three key areas. The provision of social comprehensive social services by the department is one of the key pillars that would actually bring us closer to that. But also secondly, the department focuses on enabling, creating enabling environments for sustainable development, and this we do through our community development programs. And the last, but very key as well, is the delivery of quality welfare services. This essentially, our mission rests around those three pillars. That basically takes us to the realization of the vision that the Deputy Minister spoke about. I thought maybe I should just, by way of background, I'll speak to it very far at a distance, just refresh our minds in terms of how we structured the department. The core programs for the department is comprehensive social security. In this particular program, we're focusing on social assistance, commonly known as social grants, that is providing to about 15 million right now. There is a second leg to social assistance. We have done a lot of work around it, which is actually social insurance, and I'll be able to speak in detail in terms of the development around this particular area. Then the second core program is integrated development. In this branch, we prepare communities for development, and we take into cognizance that development is broader than social development. We work together with other departments of government, but we focus largely on community mobilization, household profiling, facilitating community and transformation at the community level. Then the last one, which is core program, is welfare service branch. It is through this branch that we begin to deal with rights for various categories of people, vulnerable children, women, people with disabilities, but also we take an opportunity to deal with the social ills that actually confront the target groups that we're looking at. So I thought, let me just take you through that as a way of background. The thrust of the presentation essentially will be in this particular slide. The minister has spelled out the priorities for the department for the remaining years in the political term, and essentially they are centered around social protection agenda. This social protection agenda is actually one of the important work of government, because it takes about 146 billion rand of government budget, and out of that, about 11 billion goes into provincial welfare services, community development work, and possibly just slightly under 100 billion goes into social security. I'm sure the panelists guys will be able to speak to that in detail. So our priority is actually social protection. And the pillar there is welfare services improvement, is strengthening of the NGO sector, community development, social policy coordination and research, comprehensive social protection, security and food security. I need to also indicate, as the DJ has brought it to your attention, that our priorities take into consideration government's key five priorities that the President has spelled out, which are in turn expressed in terms of the 12 outcomes. So we're supporting outcome number 1, number 3, and number 4 through our welfare services pillar, and we're supporting outcome number 12 through NGO, the strengthening of the NGO sector, which is especially our delivery partner, but also generally the overall management of the department and its entities. Community development supports outcome number 7, which basically deals with rural development issues and food security. Also, it contributes around outcomes that relate to job creation and HIV/AIDS. Social policy coordination plays an important role in the matters related to international relations through our engagement at the regional level in terms of strengthening social policy discourse or evidence-based mapping in the region and also internationally. our population unit also fits nicely in this particular priority. Comprehensive social security, whilst it's a work that is broad in its own, we have linked it up nicely with outcome number four, which is really about job creation and also making sure that the jobs that we create are actually decent. Through our social insurance initiatives, we're beginning to delve into that. And the last one is food security, which is supported by, you know, supports outcome number seven. Let me just, for a moment, maybe indicate the color code today. The green colors that you see are the outcomes that the minister is expected to account to in terms of the agreement that she has entered with the president. The ones on amber are the ones that we feel that although we're not expected to directly account, we have made lots of investments, particularly around quality-based education in the form of ECD, and the area of social crime under outcome three. So we feel that those are the things that we need to be able to speak to as well. And the ones in red speak to other relevant outcomes that we believe social development can make a meaningful contribution towards. I will now go into details in terms of each priority, 1% improvement, and give the elements thereof. The 1% improvement, we have isolated essentially four key areas around this in terms of our as a priority. The number one area is sector capacity. And this is essentially moving from a point of departure that says that welfare services environment is not really defined. We have ushered a number of pieces of legislation, the Children's Act, or the Prisons Act, and many others. I think we are at the stage where we want to begin to bolster our presence in terms of our social services on the ground, delivering those obligations that are stipulated in those particular acts, but also begin to unblock service delivery issues through training and further guidance of our delivery partners. The NGO funding is the second part under water services. We are beginning to bring some reforms around this NGO funding. I think in recognition of the fact that NGOs remain very critical in delivering our services. Essentially, 80% of our services are delivered by NGOs. So we would be, in the next few months, just be sending also proposals requesting NGOs to deliver services of social development where we have identified the needs. I think currently the challenge is just that maybe services are being delivered just pretty much everywhere. But through our household profiling and some of the internal research that we're conducting, we're beginning to direct that area of work. The third element is reduction in substance abuse. The Department of Social Development will be leading campaigns we have already started that seek to reduce the abuse of drugs and rehabilitate and integrate drug users to become addict-free and productive members of our society. This campaign will oversee policy and legislative changes in government. Again, here we recognize that we're not the only players. We may be playing a lead role. We need to make sure that we have the police, the Department of Justice, our Home Affairs, everybody coming together to work with us in this campaign. This will be accompanied by social change strategies to deal with the current unhealthy use of alcohol in South Africa. And we'll be partnering again once more with NGOs that are very close to our people to deliver that education. Tackling of social crime, we're quite challenged. I think despite our progress and best practice and many other policies, the country remains challenged in terms of the levels of social crime, which are particularly very high. So our empowerment programs and social crime prevention strategies will be delivered in partnership with society organizations to begin to deal with the scourge of social crime. We will be in particularly increasing levels of support for organizations that are working to prevent and reduce gender-based violence. So we'll have that bias to work with those. Promotion and establishment of ECD, that would be another element under welfare services improvement. The department will continue to accelerate the early childhood development program to ensure that every child is given a good start in life and begin. I think this will help us begin to alter the development trajectory in our country. if we start well with children, I think we can secure and guarantee a better South Africa in the next few years. The current number of children in early childhood development sites subsidized by government has increased from 270,000 to about 443,000. Would want to continue increasing these numbers going forward, and I'll speak to that when I reach into the annual targets. But also I think what is very important is to continue to foster coordination of different players on the ECD with a view of achieving the necessary cognitive, physical and psychosocial outcomes for children. I think once we begin to keep our eyes around those things, we'll be getting somewhere. Moving into community development, priority areas, as I've mentioned before, social mobilization and facilitation are the key pillars. Here we'll be promoting investments in building and strengthening community and household capacity towards the line. So as we profile households, we'll be looking at the skill sets that they actually have, see how we match them with other government programs, where we have appropriate programs ourselves, we'll be facilitating the engagement with those kinds of activities. But also, we will be working very closely with our National Development Agency, which basically focuses on enterprise development for communities. So this would be some of the activities engaged in. We'll be targeting youth and women to ensure that they are provided with appropriate support to unleash the potential to achieve sustainable livelihoods. Also, we'll ensure that our engagement with communities is well coordinated with the rest of other government departments. Provision of comprehensive social security, third pillar for our strategy and the social protection. We believe that the social assistance program of government remains the mainstay of our contribution to reduce income poverty in South Africa. So the number of people receiving these grants are increasing. We're talking 50 million by January 2011. We will also research the viability of revising the means test for all grant types so that more people who need assistance may be rich. For instance, the starting point with the old age grant, we're working on the means test, revising it upwards from 33,000 to 44,000 per annum. So this will see more older people qualifying. But this is also a precursor to a strategy that we're considering towards universalization. The department will ensure that our retirement systems are more responsive to the needs of our working people through policy integration and benefit payment integration. Currently, Social Security benefits, as we know them, they are in different departments, in Department of Health, talking health insurance, it's called COIDA, elsewhere. We want to begin to bring these things under a single policy coordination unit, and in this particular case we're thinking about establishing a Department of Social Security. But also in that there will be benefits in terms of introducing benefit payments that will be common to all the beneficiaries, so we'll be bringing more IT systems to assist us in that regard. Also, ensuring access and integrating the social security system. We have started with our appeals tribunal, which basically adjudicates all the social grant appeals. We're doing well. I think I'll be able to speak to the backlog that we've cut thus far. But also, we're advancing beyond that now. We're moving into establishing the inspectorate of the social security to examine and maintain the integrity of our social security system. So these are another institutional measure to support the social security environment. Strengthening of the NGO sector. Here we'll be looking at also improving governance and the turnaround time for the registration of NGOs. We'll be working together with various sections of our society as a key strategy. The department will continue to lead in the registration and strengthening of civil society organizations that support communities and service delivery broadly on development issues. We will improve information technology systems and publish lists of organizations that have demonstrated their willingness to be accountable. We believe that this will increase the credibility and indeed marketability of those organizations. One of this will be on education through consultative workshops, information to the public and these other agencies in government on the NPO registration system. And I think this might also facilitate corporate social investment. If business has this database of where these organizations are, what they're doing, then they would know exactly where to invest. The last priority is not the last one, but maybe just the one on food security. I must indicate that here we're not necessarily champions around food security, but we play a very important role. By mere fact that we're providing social grants to 50 million people, that has really gone a long way in beginning to deal with the issue of food security. But also we'll be sharing the database on the soft pen with the Department of Agriculture, our household profiling with the Department of Agriculture, which is basically leading on food security. We have, however, some interventions in this regard in terms of food gardens, and also we have the community nutrition centers that are currently running, but we'll be working very closely with the Department of Agriculture in this particular area. We're also investigating a model from Brazil, which is called Zero Hunger Program, and see what lessons we can learn from it. On social policy, coordination and research, we believe that research, if done properly, can begin to direct us in terms of where the interventions should be that would make a difference to our people. So we'll be focusing on implementing research and capacity building that would improve the implementation of our population policy, particularly in support of local government planning, place more emphasis on gender equity, equality, and empowerment of women, youth, as well as health concerns that with demographic consequences, particularly HIV/AIDS, play a progressive role in international population affairs, also provide strategic guidance on social policy development and coordination, deepen social policy discourse and evidence-based policy making. The department will be driving the policy analysis trust in support of the African agenda as well. Now I'll be just shifting the gears. Get back to the outcomes that I've mentioned before, just to indicate what is the expected outcome for social development, because there are those with broader government priorities. So if we look at outcome number 7, the department's expectation is that communities must begin to participate in influencing social change, driving change themselves. And our target that we're setting for 2014 is that 50% more on poverty wards would want to see them driving their own social change, of course with our assistance, with our interventions in terms of mobilizing them. But also 10% of community development structures facilitating social change programs. Also another expected outcome is an increase in understanding of vulnerabilities and opportunities for households and communities. And this will be realized through and into a target like 1.5 million people household profiled by 2014. When we profile these households, we'll be able to understand their vulnerabilities. We'll be able to also share this information with other government departments as well. On household profiles, this is very critical, we'll generate referrals. And these referrals will be posted to various departments. Full response will be making and follow up and monitor those kinds of interventions ourselves. We also expect youth to participate in influencing social change. The target is 1,350 youth structures that will participate in social change programs. 1 million youth are participating in youth outreach programs. We're also looking forward to cohesive communities. We think that this is very key for central to the department. And all provinces will be expected to implement intergenerational programs. These are the programs where youth and older people would meet to dialogue about issues of development, of life skills, and so forth. We think there's a lot of learning that can actually take place within that particular context. But also 98,000 youth participating in the generation activities, that would be the specific target that we have in mind. Improved access to diverse and affordable food. We're looking at 80% of poor households with access to nutritious and affordable food. So this would be our contribution to outcome number 7, a specific output that deals with food security there. We also under outcome number two, now, a long and healthy life for all South Africans, we're expecting a reduction of new HIV/AIDS infections through social behavioral change. So here, the programs that we're running in terms of education, the love life that we're transferring funds to, we're expecting to begin to see the positive impact around the reduction of new HIV infections. Reduction in the stigma on HIV/AIDS, 25% reduction in HIV and AIDS-related stigma among infected and affected children served by HCBC organizations, a reduction in the psychosocial impact of HIV and AIDS and other chronic illnesses on the population. This is what we're expecting as well. We also, under outcome number four, which is decent employment for inclusive growth, we're expecting to see an increase in terms of work opportunities, skills and income levels in the social sector. The overall target for the social sector is 750,000 work opportunities to be created by 2014. The department would be contributing around 18,000 of those as social development services. Increased social insurance coverage through mandatory contribution to pension and death and disability benefits. It's one of the outcomes that the department is expecting. Under quality basic education, the expectation is that we would want to begin to see improved access to early childhood development programs. So deal with both elements, access and quality, on ECD. The targets, respective targets, 10% annual growth on children accessing ECD programs, but also we're expecting better compliance from the standards by the centers, and also in the design of the programs. We would also be looking under outcome number three, all people in South Africa are and feel safe, a reduction in incidence of social crime. I have alluded earlier on that this is an area where we challenge. So we're looking at 100% of children in conflict with the law that they have to be assessed by the department. 60% of those that would be assessed need to be diverted, and 30% of reported victims of human trafficking are placed in recovery programs. These are some of the commitments we're making for ourselves, and also 60% of victims of gender-based violence reported and provided with services by 2014. Also, we're looking at reducing the abuse of substances in communities, 20% increase of reported cases of substance abuse accessing treatment centers. We're hoping that this will be generated the moment through the campaigns that we're running. We'll be able to get communities actively involved, but also reduce incidence of abuse of older persons. It's one of the things that we'll be targeting. Now I'll be getting to the real details, and maybe let me see which slide I can focus on, but starting maybe with social security, just to give you the trajectory, the trend. We're expecting an upward trend in social security grant. I've mentioned that the base case scenario is 15 million. We will be looking towards over 16 million by March 2014. That's the projections that we currently have. And the major grants in terms of the growth pace would be our CSG topping the list, followed by the older persons, hopefully maybe because of the minister's relaxation, and then disability, foster child grant, then the care dependency grant. This is the respective figures. I'll just maybe skip that. Looking at the social security now at the programmatic level, the specific targets, outputs and targets that we have in mind is that this year, 2011-12, we would be coming to Parliament to would begin to draft our legislation and on mandatory retirement and death and disability benefits. And we'll also be engaging in the consultation process in relation to that. But also, as I've indicated, the department will be putting up speed in terms of the establishment of the delivery of an integrated policy on social insurance, and the Department of Social Security would be one of those things that would be focused on. By among other things, looking at initial ring fencing and possible effect, affecting of our proclamation by 2011. I've mentioned the social grant threshold. Maybe I shouldn't get back to it. But on the other aspect of social security in terms of the commitment, the outputs would be adjudication of social assistance appeal to promote fair and just and equitable administrative action. And the specific targets we're setting here is to adjudicate approximately 15,000 appeals within a 90-day period of receipt. That's the specific target we're setting for ourselves. But also finalization of backlogs, finalize approximately 20,000 backlogs filled by September 2011. But let's get the information side. On the welfare services, we'll be focusing on the implementation of slide number 52. Yeah, slide number 52 under welfare services. This is part of the capacity building priority that I've alluded to earlier on. The idea would be to focus on the implementation of the recruitment and retention strategy for social workers. We currently have about over just close to 4 million graduates that have benefited from our scholarship. Would want 4,000 there. Would want to. That's it for me. That's quite our ambition. All right. The 2011-12 would be 30% increase in the scholarship awarded to social worker students. So we continue on that particular drive. Policy on social service professions and occupations approved. Some of the things we'll be looking at as well. We'll be looking at creating an environment that enables the protection and promotion of older persons. And in particular, we'll be looking at number of cases of older persons registered in our national register. Currently, it is about 300 cases. We want to increase that to about 400 cases by 2011-12. Transformation of management clubs to make sure that we become more responsive to the needs of older persons. We're looking at about 412 of old age luncheon clubs temporarily registered, and 90% of services, 90 of services temporarily also conditionally registered. The area around disability, I think, would also receive a lot of attention. The department will develop policy and legislation on social services to persons with disability. We're looking forward at a policy being approved on social services to persons with disability, also aligning it with some of the international frameworks. Coming down to the ECD, we currently have 1 million children accessing ECD programs in the country. We want to increase that by 10% in 2011-12. And also, we want to make sure that about 1,000 ECD centers comply with the norms and standards. Provision of early childhood development programs. We're also looking at the facilities implementing the registered ECD programs. We're also targeting about 1,000 of those. And on child protection services, which have to be strengthened, we're looking at about 2,000 new child abuse, neglect, and exploited cases registered on our child protection register part A. Improve access to child care and protection through alternative care services. The current level of adoption is at 2,500 cases registered annually. We want to increase that by 5% by 2011-12. Improved access to child care and protection through alternative care services also in that same space. We want to begin to look at the issue of drug incentives. 15% increase in the number of children accessing drug incentives, that's slide number 66. In this one, we want to be dealing with, for instance, street children, dealing with orphan and vulnerable children by introducing that particular service or escalating that that particular level. Slide number 67, implement and monitor the school lag. That remains very important. Our target for 2011-12 is 20% compliance to norms and standards by all programs that are linked to the school lag. The other area under welfare services would be on the anti-drug or substance abuse awareness and educational program. The focus will be on national campaign on anti-drug and substance abuse rolled out in all provinces. The campaign I've spoken about as well earlier on. We will also be focusing on white paper on the family, which has to be approved by cabinet. We're pushing for that. We're beginning with a consultation on the green paper for the family policy. And capacity building programs for provinces in line with the Child Justice Act would be looking at the extending development and training on diversion accreditation system, norms and standards for secure care, implementation of social crime prevention programs. Quality assurance for diversion programs conducted will monitor and implement and maintain the diversion accreditation system, and also will be dealing with the issues of human trafficking. We'll develop training and programs for human trafficking. If we go maybe to slide number 74, is matters related to youth, the Masupasila Youth Pioneer Program, which has to be implemented. Currently, we have baselines of 2,099 youth participating. Would want to take that to 2.7 by 2011-12, and also increase the number of mentors to 135. And number of provinces implementing the norms and standards around participation. Out of school youth placed in national youth service programs, we currently have about 1,500 youth placed in national youth service programs. We would want to take that to 1,800 youth by 2011-12. On HIV/AIDS prevention programs and social behavioral change, we'll be focusing on the number of households that are being reached by this social behavioral change. We'd want to at least reach about 50,000 households by 2011-12. Number of farming communities reached, I think we have noticed that perhaps that's an area that we have neglected when it comes to HIV/AIDS. We're targeting about 100 by 2011-12. And number of youth reached 1.7 million. HIV/AIDS prevention program for social behavioral change implemented. We continue to look at the number of NPOs delivering these services. We'll be taking it to at least 1.5 of those organizations that will be supporting delivering the HIV/AIDS services. Households receiving psychosocial services, currently we have about 1 million. We'd want to take it to 1.7 million. Number of vulnerable children would want to service, take it to about 820 by 2011-12. The other things are back office stuff in terms of monitoring and evaluation, but maybe let me focus on capacity of home community-based care organizations. We're doing well in this particular area. I think we'd want to upscale it from 14,000 caregivers that are trained to 5,000 children further training adding to our baseline, and also focusing on the training of the supervisors as well, 500. On the job creation opportunities, as I've indicated, the target would be to create 132,000 job opportunities through current and really integrated social sector sub-programs by 2011-12. And on the social policy integration and service delivery, it will continue the training in terms of building the social policy skills within government, looking at 50 policymakers being trained, constituting policy action teams that will produce better policies for government. And maybe I'll skip a couple of slides now and see if I can get into the NPO slides. On the NPO slide, slide number 88, we're looking at enhancing capacity of provinces and communities and NPO on NPO Act and governance. Here we have currently 400 NPOs capacitated on the Act itself. Would want to take that to 600 by 2011-12. Also want to make sure that 120 provincial officials are capacitated on NPO Act. The registration of NPOs, would want to see that NPOs are registered within 2 months, 80% of those NPOs, and 70% of NPO appeals adjudicated within 3 months. That's slide number 90. Let me see, maybe getting into more community development work around the social policy and integration to deliver. Slide number 95. The focus will be on communities profile. And here we're looking at upscaling the number from 1,200 communities profiles to 1,500 by 2011-12. We're also looking at household profiles, which would move from 110,000 to 200,000. And also provincial data availability. We want to generate this report for planning purposes both at the provincial and at national level. National profile report will be compiled. At least 50% of profiles clients request for appropriate interventions. I think this is very important for ourselves. And on the training of community development practitioners, we're looking at taking the numbers from 250 community development practitioners trained currently to 400 by 2011-12. But also we're driving a discussion document on the draft occupation framework for community development so that this area becomes regulated pretty much like welfare services environment. The kinds of challenges that we face is that despite our progress and best practice policies, the country still has a high social crime. The high levels of social crime are aggravated by rampant abuse of illicit substances, hence our focus on the campaign. And the most critical challenge of all is the capacity in terms of social welfare services. Professionals, the shortage of social workers. We'll be putting about 244 million rand this year into our scholarships to begin to address that. But also, we'll be talking to leadership at the universities to see how they can actually assist us. We'll be also looking at incentives of creating incentives for FET colleges to begin to train social workers in that regard. I will now stop and give to my colleague from finance to deal with the financial outlook of the department.
We must whether I should allow them to go to the financial outlook or we must focus on. I want to get it done.
I'm frustrated now because the last slide in the presentation, the one I've got here, the one in front of me, don't correspond to the one given by the department. The last few slides.
I have mentioned that over it. Yeah. But I wanted us to agree whether they should continue the presentation on financial aspects.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll propose that let them continue so that when we ask questions, it's both of them.
Okay, continue.
Thanks, Chairperson. My slides will only be a few related to the IFIT outlook of the department, starting from the 2011 financial year. If we just stick to the allocations. On overall, the department has grown from a 95.9 billion to 122 billion over the entire period, which culminates to about 8.8% on average growth for the department over the entire period. Included in our allocation for the department is major allocations which are currently earmarked, which goes to institutions, the grants, SASTA, the National Development Agency, our social work, bursaries. So if one then would look at the total allocation, then the operational budget of the department is actually very little when you come to that specific slide. Just in terms of our budget structures, the department went into a new budget structure for the new financial year. There was a National Treasury guide that said that the department was going to look at three different areas of the budget structure change. One would look at your support function, your enabling function, and also your service delivery areas. So on program one, that is our support function of the department, that stays the same. The comprehensive social security program two was split into two different programs. One we're able now to see on the program two, the new program two social assistance. One we're able to see the different grant types per allocation as well as per expenditure. Then the program 3, Social Security, is now your allocations for your SASA and also the small portion related to the operational side. The existing program 3 and 4 were collapsed to become the new Welfare Services Past Development Program, which is also a service delivery area program, and then our program 5 strategy. It's got a new name in terms of social policy integrated service delivery. So that was our new budget structures that we implemented for the new financial year. Just in the high level, this is just the allocations for the different programs. One would see the major allocation there is related to your social assistance. You see all the grants are being paid. So 89 million goes up to 114 million in total. Under program 3, the social security program, this is where our SASA allocation, the administration portion, goes to the SASA allocation. Then our welfare services, so our service delivery program, goes from 430 million to 502 million in total. Then just in terms of program 5, social policy, goes from almost 160 million to 266 million. Just in terms of our economic classifications, how do we divide our budget in terms of what we have for our personnel? Our personnel only grows in total on 5.6% average from year to year. We only made provision to fill the funded vacancies that we have. We haven't made provision for any new things on the establishment. This is to compensate for our existing structure. Then our goods and services, one would see there's a slight drop from 297 to 290 over the intake period. Our department was also one of the departments that got cut by the National Treasury. It's an amount of 57 million over the MTF period. It culminates to about 19 million each year. Then under the tranches and subsidies, that's the major tranches for the grants. We also have smaller tranches in that amount. Then our portion for the capital payment act, capital assets, is only a small allocation from 10 to 12 million in total. Maybe we can get to the operational expenditure. Just keep these ones to detail. If one then excludes all the major transfers from our department, one will see this, that our operational allocation that we have to our day-to-day expenses is only 558 million. It grows to 608 million in total. What's the average? So the average there is 2.7% increase over the MTF period, so it's very, very small. It's actually less than the CPI index. That's just the allocation for the different programs, the operational expenditure. Program 1 being our support function, 234 to 255. Then what's left of Program 3 is the policy units. Also, the appeals is also included in that specific program. It's under the 100 million, almost over the MTF period. Under program 4, it's 144 to 163 million in total. In program 5, it's 81 to 88. So in total, only a marginal increase over the MTF period for operational. Just in terms of economic classification, compensation will stay the same as the previous slide, for goods and services also. In the small transfers, we also contribute to foreign countries for membership fees. That's what the 5.2 million allocation is for. In the allocation for our capital assets, for the payment of furniture and new equipment and those kind of things. split that we did, just to show you in terms of a pie chart, how's our program been divided. The biggest one is there under administration is 42%. Our welfare services is 26%. Program between the Social Security is 18%, and social policy is 14%. One then looks at your split on economic classification. Our compensation is almost 50% of the budget of the operational cost of an apartment. Goods and services 49%, small trans is 1%, and capital is 2%. Thanks.
Thanks, DG, for the presentation to your department. It is now time for members to interact with the presentation in terms of questions. Members?
Chairperson, mine is actually based on these vulnerable children. Although I'm going to coin it to what was presented, the slide number 79, where you talk of the vulnerable children resulting from the death of the parents, I believe, through HIV and AIDS. Now, where I come from, we don't see actually these services. And as you are saying that on welfare services, you'll be building a skilled and capable workforce that is going to support an inclusive growth plan. Now, again, you have told us that the FET colleges should be used also to train social workers. Because why I'm saying this is because most of the children that are suffering most because of the loss of parents offended by HIV/AIDS that are not seen are in deep rural areas. Now, we have the plan to increase the scholarship award of social workers by 30% and so. Now, can we, the department maybe tabulate to us how these funds are going to be distributed across these training institutions and or provinces? And so far, because we know that this is not the first time we are told about training of social workers, and we realize that without the social workers in our deep rural areas, the children are going to continue suffering because the processes need the social worker for them to be assisted with a grant or, you know, be assisted in terms of food and everything. There is a need for social workers to be involved. So to me, this issue of social workers becomes very, very important. Last time we heard that there will also be training auxiliaries. How far is that process of trying to assist in training auxiliaries? And on the very same issue, let me lastly say, what is your relationship as a national department with the local governments? Because we have got, in the local government, you have got, I think we have an MMC for social development and health, and I'm not sure how they call them, so that they are able to monitor where they are, if these services are really reaching our people. My second question is on the substance abuse, which we believe that we have an act that has been passed on substance abuse. But now, my question would be, once we deal with this, there is a need for rehabilitation centers. Now, how prepared are we as a department with this rehabilitation centers? Are they well resourced? Do we have them everywhere? And are they equitably distributed in the different provinces? And if so, not today, but we would be happy if that information can be on paper so that we know where we find these rehabilitation centers in future. The other one that I want to talk on, Chairperson, is on the youth dialogue. In the presentation, we heard that there will be assistance to the young people, you know, on these very issues of drug abuse and all that. There will be youth dialogues. How are you going to connect? Because usually these dialogues are happening, but they are happening in affluent areas. And the real problems are there in the bushes, there where the kids don't even know the difference of most of these things that they can cause harm to them, because you know they don't get that education. How are we going? Is it the how is the process going to unfold to the deeper rural area so that even the youth there can be able to participate in this youth dialogues, which we really very much welcome. Lastly, let me just go on this one of caregivers. As you were presenting, you said that the caregivers have done a very good job. It's happening, it's going on. But I must tell you that as we do our constituency work, we are confronted with caregivers that don't even have a glove. I'm not going to talk about other resources that they need to have as they do their job. Just a glove for safety of their hands, they don't have. They use plastics. And those resources are not evenly distributed. Now, my worry is these things we always mention, but is there no way of monitoring, especially in those areas, you know, where people are so relaxed, and try to get to make sure that there are reports that are given to your department. I don't know how you are going to make this reach you, but there should be reports that come to this department, because these things happen where there is monitoring. Where there is no monitoring, people simply abuse the resources, or they don't have them at all that they should be able to assist. So caregivers are part of the very important portion in our assisting those sick people in our areas, but there is a need for monitoring. That is why I said your relationship with local government, this is three spheres of government. How do you relate with them? For now, Chairperson, I think I must stop there, except to say, what is your relationship? Yeah, this thing of ECDs. Presently, the schools are introducing the grade R's in the schools system. Now, this grade R's, I'm not sure how this impacts on the services that are provided by this Department of Social Development, you know, because it's their focus area about the ECDs. But now, I'm not sure that the relationship between your department and basic education, how do you work on the grade R classes? I'll stop here for now. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Acting Chair. I would start with this question. I'm not sure where does it fall on CFO. When we were taking Parliament to the People in Free State Kwakwa, we had two sessions of social development and SASA. The cry there was the question of, which might not only be a question of Free State or God, the question of the insufficient transport for social workers. And it may be the chicken and the egg, because the cry was that from them, we don't have transport, so we can't be visible. We don't have offices, so we can't deal with the paperwork. But in terms of service delivery, people don't see them. They see them run about 12,
and around about 11, and by 1 they disappear. And in one of the meetings we raised this with your department, and it was the answer was that you won't see them because they're visiting homes. But the concern on delivery on social workers was on people which they are supposed to be visiting. But in defense from themselves was that we can't go to them because we don't have enough transport. So we prefer to stay at home. Because we don't have offices also, that's why there's a backlog of servicing people in terms of paperwork. So I don't know where is it located, whether it's on transfers or whatever. If it is on transfers or whatever, which program, is there any commitment in terms of looking into improving that problem? The other one is on the job creation. I see, I think on three different slides, but let me just go to slide 101. You have community development practitioners, medium term 2011-12, we have 400 CDPs, I think, to be trained. And my question would be, how do you divide this 400 into provinces? Which provinces will benefit out of this? And I'm raising that in terms of your contribution towards job creation, so that we can then be able to advise our youth, wherever we come from, that there is this another route that on job creation that Department of Social Development is coming up with. The other one is on the NPO. You also are talking about improved access to NPO information. Because we are the National Council of Provinces, not portfolio or a select committee, our interest is that as you come up with these numbers, we are interested in terms of when you talk of 25 national government departments, or when you talk of districts, number of districts with deficit health debt, where are these districts? Where are they located? In which province? Where? The other one is yeah, all these are NPOs with like 90 and 89. The interest is where are they? And the other thing, you also talk about the a long healthy life for all South Africans and number of participants trained. I think also the training, whether they'll volunteer or they'll get employed, is that as you talk of 4 training sessions and 100 participants conducted in 2011-2012, where is your target? Is it in Limpopo? Is it in Gauteng? Is it in Free State? Where are they? So that we can help you in recruiting. The other one is on the question of people feel safe. All people in South Africa are and feel safe. There's a whole question of this session of corrective rape, which is gender-based abuse. It's rife, that's why I'm saying session. Gender-based violence against hatred on gays and lesbians. I'm not sure what is your contribution or how do you work with women, children, people with disability ministry. the worst one that I got so hurt and it touched me was a girl of 14 years raped because she has declared her status of saying she's a lesbian in Atreshville, and she was raped when we're on constituency stuff now. And when police, it's women, people with disabilities, and children, and also with police. How is your working relations? Because when the perpetrators are locked in, the police will say no, it is not a gender based. It's not a corrective rape or gender based. It's whatever, and then the case just loses its meaning, and the perpetrator got scot-free. The other one is on drugs. Reduced incidence of substance abuse in communities. Your slide 68. I'm from Gauteng. I know Gauteng and Western Cape are known of using these things. And Gauteng was on media for wrong reasons on Nyaube and wherever, and also Cape, Western Cape is on wrong media on wrong reasons with TIC and whatever. But where I'm coming from is at school level, the question of Nyaube is very rife in Gauteng and in schools. And the question of Daga cake is very rife. The mothers that are selling the maguinas and food for children at schools, at the gate there, they sell to the learners this Daga cake. So it's also a question of working together or memorandum of understanding between the police, yourselves, and the health department in terms of what, how safe is the food that is being sold to learners in school. Because the children now know that this cake is a certain Daga, and they go there. There's business to these people. So, it's very ripe in Gauteng. There's this fashion again that has come. The question of from people that are issuing out ARVs, I think last week was the case, and people using ARVs for drugs. Also, the whole question of saying the tripartite, the health, yourselves, and the police, so that you don't only punish those that will be smoking that concoction, or punish, there's a hierarchy where we just send these ARVs so that they become drugs and not do what is expected to do. The other one is on the you'll pardon me. I have not acted on this case. There's a family in Vlakfontein in my constituency. They are orphans. They're six. The children, they're six in all. And then the home took four and left two. The two that were left, the one child is 16 and the other one is 6 years. They are left in an RDP house. Unfortunately for them, the place where those RDP houses, the wetland area, they're flat there, for almost 400 houses are on wetland. I've acted on to raise the MEC for housing in terms of ensure, because people there are demanding that they be relocated. And the MEC was then saying, no, let's send the engineers first to see how far is the impact of water. so that we don't just relocate them and we find that we can do something in terms of engineering. But whilst the engineers are busy digging to rechannel water, the 16-year girl and this 6-year, they are affected by this because they can't go anywhere. No one will give them an alternative home. My question is that, is there any ceiling from the home in terms of we can only take 4 and we can't take all of you, the 6 of you? Why were they left? Nobody has an answer in terms of why take 4 and leave the other. Let me just end there for now. Thanks.
Honorable Divulus.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The first thing I must mention is...
Can you go on record?
Thank you.
Very sorry. As my grand mother was telling me, I'm very, very sorry. Chairperson, I can just repeat what I was saying before we go into the financial report, that this document usually... this morning frustrated me as we were going to the end of the document, because the slides did not correspond to the one on the screen. So and also on the financial slides from the beginning, the numbers also didn't correspond. And I want to ask the department that I was actually thinking that maybe that is a psychological trick to just confuse us. And I'm actually not confused, but I'm actually very frustrated, and I'm dealing with that now. Chairperson, my first question is to the department, that one of the most ills in our community are the loan sharks and the shabins. We provide our to poorest of the poor with grants. But these people actually slot into that in our communities, and they actually let our people get more poorer and poorer, 50% on 1 rand and 100% on 1 rand. And I'm very worried about that situation. Now, in the department, I don't see any program, definite program, to focus on that situation, so that we can actually educate our people so that they can understand what is the exact influence on them from that side. Can the department just tell us here what is the situation there? And then the second question, Honorable Chairperson, is what is the department's focus on actually to get a quality outcome of education? I understand that we want more children in the ECD centers, but it is not the numbers, but actually the quality which is counting, because we have problems in the foundation phase in our schools. So we as the Department of Social Development, and I also know that the Health Department is also into that situation, and the Education Department. But we must play, all of us, a role how to improve the quality of education in the ECD centers. So then we will have a better outcome in the foundation phase. And then the imbalances in our communities. I'm actually thinking that we are spoon-feeding a person who is ill just to keep him alive from the different programs of the department. We know that we have huge imbalances between our communities, and in the disadvantaged communities we also want them to better their situation, so that they come nearer to their quality of life to the other communities. We have more and more in money-wise, in property and so on. So we must have more programs to educate our people how they can come out of that situation to better their situation. I hope you understand what I'm driving at. In the apartheid system, you know, we actually know that one of our race groups have a better situation. And now in this democratic government, we also want to address that situation so that the people can come out of that situation. So I actually looking at in the department a specific program to address that situation over a period of time. You don't get it. I think one of you must actually translate it. In die apartheid situasie was daar 'n groep in ons land die meer disadvantaged men groepe was in 'n situasie dat hulle die swakker gedeelte van die regering gekry het, wat hulle gelaat het dat hulle agter is. En ek praat nou uit die hart uit. En 'n ander groep het die voordele van die regering gekry en daarom is hulle in 'n beter situasie. Nou die demokratiese regering en ons in die maatskaplike ontwikkelingsdepartement het geen definitiewe program om daardie situasie ook te adresseer nie. Sodat die groepe wat minder bevoordeel was, ook die geleentheid kry om uit daardie posisie uit te kom. Wat ons in die departement doen, ons gee toelaas en onderhoud en so aan. Dis hoekom ek sê ons maak 'n siek persoon gee ons 'n lepeltjie om hom net aan die lewe te hou. Maar ons wil hom nie gesond maak. Ons wil hom eerder siek hou. As ek nou by die... focus program.
Yeah.
Maybe in job creation or something like that. Then Honorable Chairperson, if I can go on the same on slide 22. 1.5 million poor households profiled by 2014. Now, actually, in the same situation which I was now debating, that we are looking at that we want to decrease poverty. We want to decrease poverty and not sustaining the poverty level. We must actually going down the poverty percentage in our community. And I'm actually looking at in the department strategic plan to address that situation in our community. So one of the issues is to create more jobs. And on the slide number 28, 750,000 jobs will be created up to 2014. And then on slide 81, 255,000 jobs will also be created in 2014. Now, the document does not speak to the permanent or temporary situation of job creation. Can the department just elaborate on that situation? We all want to see that more people must get work, and then less people will depend on grants. And that is why I'm asking that question. And then, Honorable Chairperson, connection with our welfare services policy. Now, in the medium term targets, 2011-12, 20% compliance, 2012-13, 20%, and 2013-14%, also 20%. 2013 and 2014, 20%. Now, this shows me that we only reach 60%, if I'm actually understanding this slide correctly. Now, I'm actually looking to address the situation because the baseline is 0% compliance in the norms and standards. Now, over 3 years, we only will come to the 60%. Now, I'm actually interested in 2014, we must actually come nearer to the 100% compliance in the different provinces. Can the department just tell us why that increased 2020? I know that we only have a certain amount of money and a certain amount of staff to address that, but maybe we can improve it. And we don't want to put a target which the department cannot reach. And then on slide 75, Honorable Chairperson, there is 1,800 youth placed in NYS, and then it goes up very sharp, lead to 14,000. And then, I'm actually believing that maybe this target is too high. Maybe. And the department just must tell us that it can reach that 14,000. Youth placement in the NYS. And then I think there's one more honorable chairperson. Let me just go through it quickly. Maybe there's no more. Oh, the other ones, I already addressed a lot of slides which not corresponding. Thank you, honorable chairperson.
Honorable de Villas, you earlier indicated that the figures on the screen and the figures in your document don't cross border.
The slide.
If you
I already addressed that situation. Department must just tell us because it's actually confusing myself and I also think my colleagues here.
Okay. Honorable Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to start right at the end by first looking at the SPY chart on page 119. And if you look at operational allocations per program, I suppose it's a scientifically worked out formula, but I still believe that 43% on administration is much too high. I believe that much more money should go right to the ground, to the people itself that needs the grant. Then the second thing I'm going to, the DG will know me by now on that, but on SASA, that are distributing the grants, I want to know if they regulate it and if there's a type of an oversight on that. Because I must say, by next year's financial report from SASA, I would like to see the delivery of those grants, how it was accordingly dished out to people, as there was, especially before the elections come to say, a lot of irregularities. And I would know how the department will see to it that SASA comes to terms on this, because I've got proof of, for instance, I'm just going to mention something, and it's not a political thing to all the other members, but where SASA dished out 3,000 rand on relief in the Orange River area per person, where it should have gone to farmers and stuff, where the minister, there are a few irregularities, so not making it a political thing, but saying, I'd like to know who is looking over SASA, because they're dishing out money left, right and center. And I don't see in any reports that they have to actually come to terms at the end of the day. Then my second problem is with our Love Life program. I see that in the year 2011-12, there's 43.36 million. Through the Department of Sport, there are also 32 million. Now, I've never, ever seen Love Life come and give any of us a presentation on what those funds were given for or what programs. So to me it's an endless pit of where government is throwing in a lot of, we understand what the cause of Love Life is for, and the because I'm not seeing it anywhere. I don't know where we should look for it, or are they a buffalo that they don't have to do any, don't have to come to anyone to say what they've done with the money, because eventually it's public funds coming from Treasury. So I would like to know specifically on Love Life, who is taking responsibility on Love Life, and who is doing the oversight on the funds on Love Life, and when will we get reports on that? Thank you very much.
I think those were the questions from members. Maybe before we respond, DG, let me also put my questions on the issue of, you know, districts which have help desks. I had Honorable Mwile asked about it earlier on, but I want to further the question to ask, why only 3 districts in the whole country do have help desk? And then you also talked about Masupazila youth program. You had a baseline of 2099. That's your baseline. But on 2011, 2012, we have nothing. On the slide, we have nothing. Can you explain that? Because if you have got a baseline, you must also have something for that financial year. And then on youth, placed on the National Youth Program, you have 1.5 as a baseline, but on 2011-2012, you want to put 1.8, but your baseline is 1.5. Can you explain why? Okay. Yeah, one more question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as we are speaking, you know, I'm so worried about this offense and vulnerable children, especially those as a result of parents dying because of HIV and AIDS. I realize that in our country, it seems we don't educate much in terms of children adoption. And I believe that that is one of the options that will really assist our children. People, we know we have got different cultures, cultural differences and all that. And people resort to foster parenting because there is something that they get out of that. But there is very little happening within the country itself to adopt these vulnerable children. Now, I'm just asking the department, is enough education given out there for people to understand that adoption is not for the benefit of the family because they don't have a child, but there should be adoption because we want to assist our children that are orphaned, that are vulnerable. This problem is carrying on. You know, this child-headed families, if you come from areas where I come from and see how these kids are suffering, it's really a problem. So is there enough education being done? Do you have programs in place to try and educate our South African families in terms of adoption? That's it.
Did you over to you to respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. As you can see, I have a sizable contingent of resident experts in the department who will assist in fielding the questions. But what I would like to do is to make some preambular remarks, which are that perhaps in government today, directors general who sit and lead departments that have concurrent functions find themselves in in the most difficult situation. Because in the national consciousness, as exemplified in the questions that are posed here, the responsibility for what is done or not done at that level is something that the National Department must account for. But we all know that we don't have a federal state, nor do we have a unitary state in South Africa. As one politician smartly put it, what we have in South Africa is a complex system of cooperative governance. And it is that complexity that actually makes a conversation of this kind quite complex. But we will do the best we can to deal with the questions that relate to what happens at provincial level, using the information we have in our position. But it's a very difficult position for one to be in. I thought I should mention that. But as I said, we will certainly do the best we can. I'm going to ask my colleagues. Perhaps I will start with Dr. Mabetra, because there's a sizable number of questions relating to the welfare services. And then thereafter, I will move through to the other DGGs, and then we will then come in and respond to the rest of the questions. Dr. Mabetra.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson, and DG and colleagues. I'll start with a question on adoption and whether we have adoption campaigns or programs to make people interested in the country in adopting children. We do have adoption campaigns now and then, but what we've realized that social workers are not trained in service delivery as far as adoption is concerned. So what we have been doing last year and part of this year is to train all the social workers in the country on adoption as a form of a continuum of care. Because when they place a child in foster care, on foster care with a family, they have to give that family an option that you can either foster, we can place this child on foster care with you and then later you can adopt the child. Whether it's a relative or not, that child is better off, as you said, adopted than placed on foster care. Because when the children turn 18, and in some instances 21 when they are still at school, the foster care grant is terminated, or the placement itself is terminated. In some cases, the children end up without any, proper arrangement for their living. So it's something that we're working on. Last year we developed a strategy and we're implementing that strategy this year. But the initial part, the first phase of that strategy is to train everyone around in the country who deliver services to children on adoption. With regard to the training of social workers, I just want to make a correction that social workers cannot be trained at ICT colleges. We train social auxiliary workers, and we can also train child and youth care workers at FET colleges. Social work is a degree course, so it has to take place at a university. The question is, how are funds distributed in the country, especially per university? We have those figures, but I don't have them with me. I looked in the computer, but we can make them available.
Mm-hmm.
What we have, we've got quite a huge number of young people training at the historically black universities. For example, the University of Fort Hare, we've got the one with the largest number of students, and the universities of Limpopo and Venda, Northwest, those are the universities that are carrying the bulk of the students. So automatically the flow of the money goes to those universities and to young people in historically disadvantaged universities and provinces. For example, if you look at Cape Town, there are very few students on the scholarship program at Cape Town University and the University of Pretoria. Why? Because those universities have got a quota. They don't take more than, for example, 50 just making an example, I'm not, I don't know the exact number, 50 first year students, they've got a limited number, whereas other universities do not have do not have those restrictions. We just want to add that we are continuously training social auxiliary workers. At the moment, I think we've got something like 4,000 social auxiliary workers, and we will be continuing training at provincial level. And at the moment, we've got 3,523 young or people that have been trained as social workers, and they are working in the field as social workers on the scholarship program. And the scholarship program, the current students are those that are on the scholarship program is 3,000, it's almost 4,000. But we, with the money that is remaining after our calculations, this year we'll add 565 students. The provinces also are putting money into the scholarship program. For example, Limpopo has got 400 students on scholarship, and Eastern Cape has got close to 600 students on the scholarship. Yeah, in addition to the national. So if you calculate it, really, we're back to almost 6,000 students on the scholarship program in the country. Yeah. As far as substance abuse is concerned, with regards to the provision of rehabilitation center, this is one of the areas that was identified as critical at the summit on anti-substance abuse. And it's also, like the DG was saying, it's also a competency of the provincial departments of social development. But there are rehabilitation centers, but they are concentrated mainly in the urban area. We will provide you with the figures as where exactly they are. We know that provinces have got plans on, you know, improving and providing more rehabilitation centers in each province. The youth dialogue. Yeah, we will provide that information on where the existing ones are situated, and even the plans for the establishment of the new ones in the provinces, especially those who are lacking this currently. The youth dialogue, we're working with the provinces again on this program. We will ensure that, you know, it is inclusive. The program is inclusive of young people in the rural areas. Normally, the dialogues are held in such a way that every group is well represented, especially, you know, in the rural areas and in the urban areas. The dialogues are not only held in the urban areas, because their dialogues are sort of small group discussions.
Mm.
So it means you have to move around. You don't go to the urban areas only. I think Peter is the one on caregivers. I don't have information on that, but I know the home community-based care program has got a very good monitoring and evaluation system program for training, for service delivery. But I think we need to know which areas these services are not existent, so that we can make a follow-up. With basic education, yeah, there was a question with ECD. We are working with the Department of Basic Education. In fact, the role of the social development in both for grade R and for the ECD for children 0 to 4 is in the basic education service delivery. Service delivery agreement. So we have an interdepartmental committee with health education, with basic education, ourselves, and the Department of Health, and we are trying to also to engage the Department of the local government, especially the involvement of municipalities in providing infrastructure for ECD services. But those engagements are still going on, because it's not very clear whether it's municipalities that must provide ECD centers. We're working with the Treasury on that issue.
I think what I need
need to add here, Chairperson, if I may, is that the services that we render for children between ages 0 and 4 are very crucial for what happens to the rest of this child's life.
Yeah.
And once they reach grade R, if the grounding is not properly done, it's already late for that child to catch up. So our services are primarily targeted at that age category of 0 to 4. Which focuses on early learning stimulation and cognitive development. Because if that is not done, by the time they reach grade R, which is the readiness stage, if that is not properly done, it is too late. I think the question was, what is the impact of our services? And I see our impact in that sense, that if what we are supposed to do, and by the way, it's not just social development and basic education. The Department of Health plays a very important role. Part of the benefits, apart from making sure that the nutrition that's provided to, or the food that is provided to the children is nutritious, in fact, the Department of Health is supposed to provide us with the expertise to assist the children. Because they can test their hearing, they can test their speech, they can test a whole range of things that children might or might not have, which things can be corrected in good time while they're still young. Because once they've reached a certain age, it becomes very difficult, if not impossible, to reverse some of the disadvantages. So what it means, therefore, is that the services we provide are absolutely crucial. Improving their life chances of these children. And by the time they reach the grade R, we must have done what we are supposed to do. So that is essentially the magnitude of the impact, and of put in other words, that's what makes our services very, very important, which is why it's important for us to have as many children as possible coming into the early childhood development. But it's not enough to simply have the numbers. I think all of them remember raising the question. We need to focus on the quality of it. Because if we focus only on the numbers of children, but not on quality, we might actually end up doing damage than good. So the numbers by which we would like to increase are also carefully monitored, because they are also guided by the availability of budget, which availability of budget is able to tell us how many early childhood development practitioners you are able to recruit and train and make sure that these children are given the best services possible. If we had all the money in the world, I'm sure... But perhaps even with all the money in the world, there will be great risks that will compromise on quality. Because to build quality, we need time and space to do that. And I think we're better off coming at it in a calculated way, rather than simply chasing the numbers and hoping that quality will take care of itself. Thanks, James.
I think just to continue with quality. The Department of Basic Education does the training of ECD practitioners. So far, we've trained quite a huge number, more than 20,000 of the ECD practitioners have been trained. But also, with the implementation of the new Children's Act, it does give a provision for the norms and standards for the ECD program, and also the site, what we call partial care facilities, where the ECD takes place, because some places are just so dirty, they are not well kept, so we have to monitor that and make sure that those facilities, they keep to the standards that have been set in the legislation. And with regard to, I know this question was asked last time, I don't know whether it was in this meeting, about the social workers that are not available at community level because they say they don't have transport.
It has nothing
you know, I feel...
Now I'm asking it from the budgeting.
Where is this place where the social... Maybe we need the name of the place so that we can follow up. Because social workers get subsidized cars in most of the provinces. I know in most of the provinces they get subsidized. Yeah,
it's the current area.
Yeah. I'll get particulars so that we can, you know, follow up. Yeah.
And we were at Ekwakwa where they were saying this, sharing and
And that's if social workers choose not to have a subsidized car. But especially in Eastern Cape, I know most of the social workers have got subsidized cars. In fact, the province insists that they must buy vans, you know, this, what do you call it, trinkets. So that they can be able
to cross the rivers,
you know, to give transport to clients when it's possible, or use the car as a sedan when it's necessary. But I think we need to. I'll have to take this up and investigate what is happening. And the availability at offices, we did explain that they cannot be. I think what they need to do is to inform the community when will they be available at the office and when do they go out to do their investigations. The infrastructure, we know, is a problem. I don't know whether you might want to address that at a later stage, but the department has now got a strategy and we've got a plan on how we are going to make sure that there is sufficient office space for all the officials that work in the Department of Social Development offices. What we have also realized is supervision. We're churning out quite a large number of young people going and to work in the community through the scholarship and through the other programs, but there's no supervision. So the minister is engaging retired social workers so that they can come back and help with the mentoring and the coaching of newly qualified social workers. The issue of all people in South Africa are and feel safe in relation to corrective rape. That's a major problem. But we have a rape strategy, which is led by the Department of Justice, and they deal with all types of rape, including, you know, even different reasons for rape. The department is also a lead department for victim empowerment, and we've just improved the victim empowerment provisions or program through the funding that we got from the European Commission. And we know the NPA leads as far as the Tutuzela centers are concerned. There's a lot that has been done, but maybe it's the accessibility of our services that we still need to make people aware where can they get the service and to address their need as immediate as possible. There's also trauma counseling. We work with the NGOs that deliver trauma counseling. But the main thing, as you say, is the prevention. And I think that the victim empowerment program part of it includes the prevention part so that we don't deal with the crime. We deal with them. We don't deal with the prevention. I think it's a countrywide. It involves all stakeholders, not only the Department of Social Development and Justice, but everyone at community level, just to educate people about, you know, sexual orientation. That is a right. It's a constitutional right to every person in the country. Back on substance abuse. The fact that Nyaope is rife in schools and in communities, especially in Gauteng. This matter is constantly on the agenda, I think, of the IMC, the Interministerial Committee on Anti-Substance Abuse, which has just been established. It was established last year in October, the IMC ensures that each department deals with their mandate as far as substance abuse is concerned. For example, the Minister of Basic Education will make sure that the drugs are eliminated from the schools, that children don't bring drugs to school. I know basic education has started introducing some of the measures to ensure that children don't bring, they say to the children, they don't bring drugs at school. And then the Department of Trade and Industry is also working very hard with amending legislation to limit the taverns at community level and to remove these people that sell drugs, you know, the cookies, as you said, at the school, that, you know, any premise, any site where a drug is illegal drugs are sold, they have to close down. And we work together with the Department of the Police. If you had a summit, you could have heard the commissioner saying, you know, Commissioner Dele said he's going to make sure that all these taverns, all these small industries that produce drugs are going to close down. So I think there's a new effort now to make sure that we remove drugs in the country. And the antiretroviral, let me do the antiretroviral side. Yeah.
Chairperson, I think with regard to drugs at school, especially if it, you know, they now come in the form of food, this is perhaps an issue we would need to take up in the interministerial committee, not only in relation to the IMC on drug and substance abuse, but even the one on food security and nutrition. Part of our solution actually lies in us universalizing the school nutrition program, so that you take away the need for other people to want to sell anything around the school premises, because you know that you have a diet that is carefully regulated, provided by people you know, presumably mothers who also have children in these schools, but mothers from the community who have a vested interest in these kids being brought up properly. I think part of the solution lies in us rethinking the school nutrition program, so that not only is it should that be reserved for children who come from poor families, who can't buy themselves lunch, but in fact, if you want to destigmatize it even, you make sure that every child in that school participates in that. It then gives you control over what these children need. But if you still allow kids to step out of the schoolyard to buy other things, then the risk of them buying darker cookies and other things remains much greater.
Yeah.
But it's a matter that we will take up at that level.
Okay.
They call it Wanga. Is it Wanga?
Wunga.
The drug that
Wunga.
Is Wunga. That is, yeah. But I think there's no evidence that it really exists. At the conference, you know, it was debated whether people do use antiretrovirals or not. But the Minister of Health is aware of this. And I think there are plans in place to make sure that, I think it's education as well. Educating people not to get their drugs stolen, because people say they don't give their drugs willingly, they get stolen or they sell them, you know, to be used to produce this drug. So it's part of that IMC, you know, plan. And the conference came up with the resolutions on how we're going to deal with, we should deal with these issues, and the campaign on substance abuse this year and the following year will be based on the resolutions that were taken at the summit. Yeah, the family, the orphans that flood contain, I just don't understand why these two young people were left out. There could be reasons, but can we get the details so that we can follow up? Yeah. Children who belong to the same family and even from the same household, if they are left behind by parents or relatives, are not supposed to be separated. It's in our policy the children should, that's how we have child-headed households, so that we can rather take services to the children than remove them. And but where there's no house, the social workers and child and youth care workers that work with that family should try and make a plan for the children to be removed to a temporary place while we are looking for a house for them. But I don't want to make assumptions about what could be happening here. I think the best thing is to get to see the case and see what's going on. The loan sharks, I think Mr. Kagadi will deal with that.
Far from it, sir.
Okay. Because it's people who are on grants who and the saving, spending the money.
It's no longer.
Yeah, it's no longer. Okay. Sorry, Mr. Pagas. No, I'm not. Yeah. There's the last one, DG. The compliance to norms and standards. I think in the plan it says we are going to spread, you know, the compliance by 20% each year. The norms and standards have got implications, serious implications for human resources and for availability of financial resources. For example, we may say we need so many social workers one social worker to so many children. To be able to reach that figure, you will need to have resources and people employed to that. So that why we are spreading it so by 20%, and it allows us and allows the provinces to put measures in place, especially resources in place for the full implementation. Because we don't want to be overestimate, and at a later stage when we come here, you know, you say, you know, but you said you'll have full implementation of this norms and standards by the end of 2014. Only to find it we are very far away. Thank you, Tiji.
That's a fine.
Thanks, honorable members, DG. I think I need to. There's many questions that have been raised, but I think let me start with a little bit of a political speech. So that we can put the context in terms of the questions that have been raised. You realize that the attainment of democracy in 1994 has brought us as the country the possibility of dealing with issues of poverty, inequality, broadly. And therefore, the Department of Social Development, as one of us, have had an approach to deal with that, so that communities could attain comprehensive evolution in terms of development. And that will always encompass issues of economy, service delivery, etc., etc. That's one of the aspects. So in that, within the department, community development program was developed with the purposes of mobilizing communities, and especially looking at the inequality, focusing on the rural, poor people. So one of the things that I think the Honorable Debeers have asked is that the approach which the Department of Social Development is taking in collaboration with other departments and with provinces is a planned development of communities by mobilizing them, by ensuring that communities can talk, community structures are strengthened, for example, non-profit organizations that are there, community structures, some of them are traditional, and also bringing in an aspect of what opportunities exist, how to access services, which services are there. So I think broadly, that is the program that we implement. It is, though it is difficult to monitor in terms of how many of those, because it's a behavioral change, movement, migration. But I think that's the focus of community development. But there is a program like that in the department, and I think we are heading headway. One of the areas that we target is that for you to be able to understand what exists in your community, the only thing that you could do, which is much more basic, is to do what you call community and household profiling. Going into the house and
sitting with them and say, what are the problems that are there? You'll be able to identify those. And the department has got the NISIS that analyze that. And all departments like rural development and stuff, we do that. Then when you go to communities, then we refer to appropriate intervention, whether it's housing, economy, and I think those are the things that we as a country, we have. Now, coming specifically, our target is in the rural area, in most of the rural areas, but I think it should be taken that we can't do all at the same time. This is where we start, and progressively we progress into the rural areas, and also focusing on the urban areas, the squatter areas that are mushrooming in urban areas. There was a question on the issue of the HIV/AIDS in terms of the non-availability of gloves for CCG. I think there's been, when we do monitoring of the community caregivers, we always find those challenges. And I think our collaboration with the Department of Health does provide those amenities for caregivers to go to the household. Sometimes it can run dry, but I think we will take up the issues and follow it up with the relevant provinces. The other part in terms of the CDP, in terms of job creation, CDP are employee of the department. We have got I opened the computer to check how much we have got a spreadsheet in terms of how many CDPs are in a province, in each and every province, and in terms of what are the gaps in terms of recruiting new CDPs for training. And I think we've got that. We can provide that information. The other part was the issue of the NPOs. There were questions specifically was looking at the information. I think members should realize that registering as a non-profit organization is voluntary. You don't go to community and say, come, register. They come to register. What we ought to do is to provide more information on the ground. When you check in terms of the registration database, we find that 31% of all new applications that we receive have got forms. They have to be returned back. Only about 69% of them are registered at once, which means there's a need within communities to be educated on how to fill those forms, what is a non-profit organization, what is the function. So our approach to deal with that has to be staged or phased, because if you don't do that, we register NPOs for the country. The other government departments have got their own NPOs that are registered by us. So one of the first things we do, especially in relation to those registered NPOs that doesn't provide us with report, we then have to target all government departments and teach them, so that wherever they fund, they must also know that they must comply with the NPO Act. That's why our approach is the government department and parastatal. And I think there was a typo in terms of the number of, it's not districts, it's provinces. We focus on 3 districts to establish a help desk so that we can showcase an approach. We focus on KwaZulu-Natal, my home province, Limpopo, and the Northwest, so that we could have, in each district, we need to have a help desk so that we can they can be assisted closely. So it will translate over 15 help desks in the first year. The reason we do that is that issue of help desk need to be met by people with budget that provinces have said they've got at the order then on. The other question relates to Masupatila. The Masupatila Pioneer Program implemented, we had 2099. There was nothing on the current year, because after the first phase, which was a pilot, I think the DG has mentioned it very well, that this concurrent type of functions, is problematic because you don't need to sit at the national and plan and say province do this. So you know, our agreement was that I think we will begin to do the, our intake in the next financial year. Our target is that in the next 2015 we will have almost 14,000 Masubatela recruited starting from next financial year. So that after the pilot, one of the things you do is to look at the exit strategy. Don't just recruit and let them out. So you need to make sure that once recruited, trained, there's an appropriate exit strategy so that you should not create a cycle of poverty again and unemployment. There was an issue on the love life. Yes, the decision on love life. There is a report on love life, and I think when we, for example, in the previous years, the figures are a number of youth that has been reached by love life. It amounts to about 1.7 million youth that have been reached. There is a report on love life. Even though we have realized that we need to review our approach to deal with love life, we have established an intergovernmental task team. It's not only us, it's us, health, and others. We have established an intergovernmental task team to begin to review whether we should continue funding love life the way we are funding, and also reorganizing ourselves. As time goes on, to develop policies, time changes. What we did 5 years might not be the same as this year. So that we are busy with that, so that we can then, as departments, come with an approach and then a review in terms of how we deal with love life. I don't know whether I'm leaving one. I think I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ. I would like to add another point as to the sorts of answers that Mr. Nishapala has given. One of the questions that was raised and other related matters that were associated with the question is really around the issue of loan sharks, shippings, and educating our people to come out of their situation of poverty, as well as the issue of having less people depending on social grants. Now, in trying to understand, for instance, those concerns, the first point really where we need to start at is really the following. It's the issue really of the relationship between poverty and unemployment in South Africa. Now, currently as we speak, if we use the expanded definition of unemployment in South Africa, we've got anything between 35% and 40% of South Africans unemployed. So we need to appreciate the relationship between those two things. The second matter as well is really the issue of decent jobs. There's quite a number of South Africans that have jobs that are employed but are poor. So the issue of decent job then comes in. If you were to look at our social grant caregivers who receive social grants, you'll find that some of them have got jobs, but the means test that we use, they still fall below the means test even when they do have jobs. So that really relates to the problem of the working poor. People have got jobs but still remain below our means test threshold. Now, the issue really of increasing numbers of people, as we put it, you know, depending or receiving social grants, really has to do with labour market failure in South Africa, because it relates to matters and issues about what is the labour absorption capacity of our economy, how many people year from year on are able to get jobs that are created in the economy in South Africa. Therefore, so long as there are market failures, so long as there are no jobs, the demand on social grants will remain. You know? So there's that kind of relationship that we do need to appreciate. Now, there are some very, very positive points that do need to be mentioned about our social grants in South Africa. The first point is the following. If you take state-owned pension and the child support grant, those two grants comprise 84% of the total number of social grants that we pay to South Africa. 84%. Now, the overwhelming proportion of those grants are paid to women. If you look at the research all over the world, when social grants are paid to women, there are positive outcomes for families and especially for children. Wherever in the world, whether it is Mexico, whether it is India, whether it is Brazil, whether it's Bangladesh, the overwhelming evidence is that when a social grant is paid to a woman, there are positive outcomes for what's in for the family. Now, in South Africa, we have, long before 1994, intense studies and analysis on the use of the then state old age pension. When the state old age pension was received by the grandmother, children were better clothed, children attended school, and their overall well-being was actually much better. So there's a very, very strong correlation that we should not forget when it comes to social grants and who these social grants are paid for in South Africa. The child support grant, 99% of the people who receive the social grants are actually women in South Africa. Now, there's also another important factor that one does need to mention. There is a remarkable constant decline in teenage pregnancy in South Africa. So the relationship, for instance, between social grants and teenage pregnancy is a non-existing one.
Okay.
There is a conclusive study conducted by the Department of Education that points out to that fact. Even if you were to look at demographic trends, children born from teenagers are actually disappearing from the picture. Second, and this is a concern that yourselves as the Select Committee need to assist us in devising strategies around, there's this problem that there are very, very low numbers on the take-up of the child support grant between age 0 and age 1. So if really then we have these girls, if we can put it that way, getting pregnant in order to receive social grants, before they leave the hospital, she will be saying, Sasa, give me my grant. You know, if then was. But then there's a very, very great concern, even from ourselves who are responsible for policy development at National, that there is this gap where there are very, very low numbers of newly born children not their parents, this is not applying for the child support grant. So that does also need to be one thing to be mentioned. Now, also studies and research that we've done is that households that receive the social grant, they're involved in so-called survivalist enterprises. Either a person goes and buys oranges, bananas, whatever else, and they put a table there. Because there's predictability. You know, even if a person makes a loss, there's predictability that that amount will be received. And also research that we've done in terms of analysis shows that there is greater employment-seeking activity from families that are in receipt of the social grant. Just the sheer ability of paying taxi fare to go and look for for a job is higher amongst households that are in receipt of the social grant. The second aspect really of this question, some of the things Mr. Nishipale, as I indicated, has already mentioned, educating people to come out of their poverty situation. There are a lot of things that we're doing in the social sector, whether it's education, whether it's health, whether it's ourselves. Expanded public works is a very good example. Early childhood development practitioners are being trained through the expanded public works program. If you look at home and community-based care work, it is through also expanded public works that we're doing that type and kind of work. We currently have committed ourselves to youth and child care workers. These are people after the end of their training, are then deployed to work in communities and the possibilities of them being in receipt of child of any type of grant, in actual fact, kind of disappear. So there are lots of things, expanded public works, Masupa Zela, community development practitioners, child and youth care workers, the war on poverty. The way in which the war on poverty works is that, yes, they do go into a household people are referred to government services, but there's another important element of it, and that important element is the following. They would identify at the local level places like FET colleges where people can go and receive skills and training in particular specific areas. So they will then link up these households to those opportunities. The second aspect of it is that they will then make sure that in instances where they are, this is outside of the social sector, for instance, the construction and maintenance of roads in rural areas, it's been done through a public works program coordinated by public works, not necessarily under the social sector, but there are many, there's quite a number of these different things that government is watching and doing. Just to end, really, fact of the matter is the challenge is very huge, but initiatives with results are already there on the ground. It's a matter of bringing these things to, say, greater impact through escalating them even higher.
Thank you. Chairperson, may I can see that we've
We are starting to panic here because other members have to go to another meeting at 12 o'clock. So can you be sure when you are there?
Certainly we will do that. I think we will go into the financial side. Perhaps I should start off by saying to Honourable Member talked about the pie chart. I think his comment was that 48% compensation is rather high. I think by any standards, yes, it is high. But this is not a matter that falls within our province to deal with, because that is a reflection of how much people are paid within the public service, and not so much how many, and how much they are paid is a function, is a collective bargaining process which we don't control as state of departments. But I must add though that there are categories of workers whose situation has warranted certain interventions called the occupation specific dispensation, to try and retain some categories of skills, like social workers, like health workers, but in our context, it's largely social workers. In our efforts to retain them and to recruit more, we've had to improve on the salaries they get. And that definitely does impact on the amount of money that now constitutes your compensation budget, if you like. So this is truly not by our design. There was a question raised, perhaps this is a question that would need to be discussed further on another day, which on closer scrutiny, I hope the Honourable Member and the audience will not be astounded by this, but it sounded more like a socialist question. Which talks about the fact that what we are continuing to do simply keeps the people, it simply allows people to survive, but we're not getting them out of poverty. Our primary interventions are to make sure that people do not slide deeper into poverty, but the responsibility to get people completely out of poverty, whilst we can make a contribution with our own investments in people, the economic sector of government needs to come to the party, because that's where opportunities for jobs, which is what Mr. Makasela was talking about, would come about, which would allow people, and not just jobs, but decent jobs, that would allow people to get out of poverty. No amount of state intervention in the form of social grants or even welfare services will get people out of poverty. What they will do is make sure that people don't slide into deeper poverty. Yes. People from the finance side, I don't know if you want to
add. Chairperson, I think the correct
comparison, because there is a direct correlation between what the departments provide for support services and the key delivery programs. Now, social assistance budget, for instance, just on its own, which is about more than 90 billion rand, is not reflected in that slide. Now, the amount of work that you need to administer and monitor and exercise oversight over those transfers, be it to Love Life, be it to SASA, be it to NDA, is a huge responsibility for the department, which is not included there if you look at that cake, because we always wanted, maybe in the interest of transparency, to strip transfers versus operational budget, but it's a false comparison, because the entire department budget has to be considered if you look at the capacity that the department should have or does have to deliver on those key programs. So I just wanted to clarify that. But over and above, Chair, just to close, that besides the money we transfer to those entities, you also have the responsibility for oversight over what the provinces are doing as implementing partners. So that on its own requires capacity, so people can effectively get out of the office, go and visit provinces, visit projects, and do all that. So that is why you see as if the department has got a big personnel if you've taken away the key transfers to various programs. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. My mind is just quick. It's just to apologize to the committee. The confusion that we've seen earlier on was because of the impression of the color slides. So that slide has actually shifted all slides by one, and hence the inconsistency. I should have actually presented off the screen, maybe paper based, but I'll make sure that it does not happen in the future.
Members, do you have further questions?
Not a question, just a comment.
Just on the one that I'm, maybe I agree with the DG on the question connecting to socialism, but I'm actually I was actually concentrating on the economic side. Yeah. Then, Honourable Chairperson, I will never rest before we can address the situation of the loan sharks and the Shabins. When I was in the province, I usually concentrate each and every year on the disparity between women and men on the pension ground. Now, I want the department just to take note of that. We must concentrate how we, and not only the department, but we as politicians, that how we can address that situation. Because our community, all over, everywhere, is in a very deep donga in the situation. Thank you.
I think your point is taken, Honorable Divas. I think we are done with the responses, and then if there are no more questions, then we will take this opportunity, DG, to thank you to the contingency to brief the committee on that strategic plan, and then allow you to leave this meeting and ask members to remain a little bit. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and committee.
Honorable members and our colleagues, customers, please, just for 5 minutes. I know we have got to go to another meeting. Yeah. Can we just say that in the previous meeting we wanted to adopt this minutes, and we wanted to adopt the report from the Netherlands, and we couldn't do that because most of us had to go out rushing. But I believe you did reach and you did go through, and you were asked to submit if there was a need for submission. So today I'm very sorry that really we are not going to have to postpone this longer than today. And I'm going to ask you to really adopt this. And we believe that any submissions have been done. It's long that we have been having these documents before us. Without wasting time, we'll start with the minutes of the 19th. And call for adoption. They are adopted. The proposal is Honorable Rancho. Do we have a seconder? Seconded by Honorable Vigilius and Honorable Mushodi.
Those are the minutes. The minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much. The minutes have been adopted. The second thing that we have to adopt is the Select Committee Strategic Plan 2011 to 2014 that we also had. I'm going to ask for a proposal. Honorable De Villiers proposes. Seconder. Honorable Mashama is a second. Thank you very much. The last one is the study tour to the Netherlands, which I believe that our content advisor really talked to us about and asked us to make submissions. And I would be failing if I don't say we also move for the adoption of this one, because we are supposed to have long registered our submissions to this. Can we move?
Chairperson, before we move,
yes.
I just want to say that I did go through the document, and there's nothing wrong with the document, but I think from, maybe I take the work out of your hands, but from my side, I want to thank the people who are responsible for organizing and also the arrangement from here to the Netherlands and back for all the work well done. I want to congratulate them and convey our appreciation on that. I thank you. Then I will propose to adopt
you. Thank you very much for the proposal. Do you have a seconder? Thank you. I'm sure you second. And now I'm just worried about our researchers not going out with us when we go to this thing. I believe it is important that our researchers accompany us. I don't know how the parliament works, but honestly speaking, we need to have at least one researcher going with us when we go on these trips, and we'll talk about it in our meeting. Thank you very much. The meeting is ended. Thank you.
No, don't wait.
No, they are here.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, but if there is an agency for them to be signed, I can sign. I'll then have books. That's fine. Thank you very much.
Hey, I know, my dear, I've seen that. I'm coming. Hey, you can go with all the
Thank you very much.
Yes, I noticed that.
How are you? How are you? Are you trying now? Okay. But anyway, but